Nadgari Vaishnavrinda ki jai, Navacharya Srila Haridas Thakur ki jai, Prem Sagar Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasti Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gop Gopinath Shankar Radhakuni Giri Govardhan ki jai, Sri Vrindavan Dham ki jai, Sri Mayapur Dham ki jai, Sri Jagannath Puri Dham ki jai, Sri Sri Gaurdai ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sankirtan Yajna ki jai, Gaura Premanande, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga, all glories to Sri Guru. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Thank you. So again, thank you all for coming. It's very nice to be here with you all. This evening we're going to read from Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Chapter 9, The Most Confidential Knowledge, Text 27. Yat karoshi yad ashnasi, Yaj Jahoshi Dadasi Yat, Yat Tapasyasi Kanteya, Tat Kurushma Mad Arpana. Translation. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, and whatever austerities you perform, do that, O son of Kunti, as an offering to me. And I'll read the purport by Srila Prabhupada. Thus, it is the duty of everyone to mold his life in such a way that he will not forget Krishna in any circumstance. Everyone has to work for maintenance of his body and soul together, and Krishna recommends herein that one should work for him. Everyone has to eat something to live. Therefore, he should accept the remnants of foodstuffs offered to Krishna. Any civilized man has to perform some religious, ritualistic ceremonies. Therefore, Krishna recommends, do it for me. And this is called archana. Everyone has a tendency to give something in charity. Krishna says, give it to me. And this means that all surplus money accumulated should be utilized in furthering the Krishna consciousness movement. Nowadays, people are very much inclined to the meditational process, which is not practical in this age. But if anyone practices meditating on Krishna 24 hours a day by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra round his beads, he is surely the greatest meditator and the greatest yogi, as substantiated by the 6th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. I'll read the verse and translation again. Yat karoshi yad ashnasi yat jahoshi dadasi yat yat tapasyasi konteya tat kurushva mad arpanam. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, and whatever austerities you perform, Do that, O son of Kunti, as an offering to me. Om Dhyana Tamarandasya Dhyana Anjana Shalakaya Chakshanamita Vyena Tasmaya Shri Guru Vyena Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishnam Stavitam Yena Mutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadati Kam Vanchikalpa Tarubhya Stankripa Sindhu Vyavacha Maridhanam Pavane Vyo Vaishnave Vyo Namodamaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasti Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Yes, so our program this evening is in the mood of housewarming, as we mentioned. Krishna and Prema Sindhu Prabhu and the children have moved in here. And of course we all know there's a difference between a house and a home. A house is just some building, some bricks and wood and so on. But a home is a place of people. Home is where the heart is. So when people come together, when a family comes together in a house and uses that house very nicely and cooperatively together, it becomes a home, and it becomes very important in the sense that it is a center, a focal point for so many important relationships and activities in terms of the relationships of love. So this is a housewarming program, and Prema Sindhu Prabhu and Krishna have moved in here, and now, along with the children, they're working together, cooperating together, assisting each other, and like this, the sum total coming together in this way, the sum total of the four people becomes more than, you know, the individual sort of value, so to speak, if we were to use that term. But when they all come together and everything becomes enhanced through the affectionate exchanges, and in that way the sum total of the four people all together as a family becomes greater than just if each one was an individual and whatever their worth would be, whatever the value of their lives would be, just independently as individuals. So in this way, housewarming is a very important thing, and a house, a home, is very important if it brings people together in the right ways. Of course, if people come together in the wrong ways, and there are many possible wrong ways, then it becomes destructive, that we all know only too well. But Prema Sindhu Prabhu and Krishna are very good people, devotees, so coming together here in their house, everything becomes enhanced. Everything develops very positively and very nicely in Krishna consciousness. And that is exactly what Lord Krishna is discussing here in this verse, explaining a very basic principle in Krishna consciousness. But we say Krishna consciousness, but of course the principle is completely universal and is as much applicable in Krishna consciousness as it is in any other spiritual or religious context. Krishna is saying that we should dedicate our lives, every different aspect of our lives, everything should be dedicated to him for his pleasure. when we say Krishna, of course, when we say Krishna, we are referring to the person who the Christians call God, or the Jews may call Yahweh, or the Muslims may call Allah, and so on like this. When we say Krishna, we are referring to the absolute truth, to God, or the absolute truth. In the Vedic tradition, in the Krishna conscious tradition, God, or the absolute truth, actually is referred to in many ways. There are many terms which are adopted, have been adopted as names, but actually they are descriptive terms, in fact, which are describing the absolute truth in different ways from different perspectives. And of those descriptive terms, or names as they are utilized, of those names, the name Krishna, according to the Vedic literatures, is the topmost, in the sense that it is the most appropriate in how it describes the absolute truth. So, well, for example, we chanted Hare Krishna, and in that mantra the name Krishna is there, but also the name Rama is there. Rama means the source of all pleasure in Sanskrit. And of course God is the source of everything, including pleasure. So to refer to him or describe him as being the source of all pleasure certainly cannot be wrong. And indeed, it's actually very accurate and very suitable and very nice. And as I said, in the Vedic tradition, there are many such terms. There are many such terms. Like, we also use the term Govinda. Govinda, go means the senses, and Inda means the master, the Lord. So God is the Lord and master of everything, including our senses, our eyes and noses and mouths and our skin and all of our senses and our sensory functions of seeing, feeling, smelling, tasting, touching, and so on like this. All those sensory functions, God, he is the master of those. Actually, he is the reservoir of everything, including all sensory capabilities, all sensory capacities. And when we are born, we are emanations from the absolute truth. And when we appear within this world and we get our particular material bodies, then our bodies are endowed with sensory capabilities. I think we can all see here. We can all hear. We can all touch, and so on like this. All of us, we have these sensory capacities, but not like he has. We can see just here within our immediate environment, but he's seeing everything. We can understand if we associate with another person closely, like in a family situation particularly, or even in a working situation sometimes, but particularly in a family situation, you associate with the same person, the same people, every day, every week and month and year, and it may be for 25 30, 40, 50 years or more, may even be 60 years. So, you know, after such a long time, you get to know the person. Yes, like this, you understand. Of course, not completely, but in so many ways, you understand the person. But you don't understand everyone like that. Maybe just a very small handful of people in your life you may understand so much in detail, but elsewhere in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna makes the point that Vedaham Samatitani, that I know everything that has happened in the past. I know everything that is happening in the present. And I also know all things that are yet to come. And on top of that, I know all living beings, Krishna says. But me, nobody knows. When he says, me, nobody knows, it doesn't mean that God is just an absolute mystery, total mystery to everyone. But certainly, no little person like us can know the unlimited Supreme Lord completely. That is not possible. But he knows everyone completely, right down to the finest detail. Even actually, so many people do not understand themselves very clearly. And sometimes they wonder, why did I do that? What made me do this? How could I have done that? Yes, so actually, nobody really knows themselves completely. But Krishna is saying in that verse that he knows everybody completely. So Govinda, we were saying, he's the master of the senses. And he knows us. He understands us. Even better than we know ourselves. And he is giving us our sensory capacities. Some of us can see better than others. I used to not have to use glasses, but now if I didn't, I would not be capable of reading. So that means the sensory power, the eyes are still there, but the power is reducing step by step. So like this. As people get older, it's not unusual that their hearing starts to fail and so on like this. Yes, so those sensory capabilities are not simply ours, as if they're just integrally part of us, but they're given to us or loaned to us, and sometimes they're withdrawn. Someone becomes blind, someone becomes deaf at some point in their life. So that means the sensory power is withdrawn, even completely. Yes, so those things are given or loaned to us temporarily. But he is Govinda, he is the master of the senses, the lord of the senses. Yes, so there are many names, which are descriptive terms, which are describing the absolute truth or God in one way or another way. He is the greatest. He is the greatest. He is unlimited. Everything is within him. But at the same time, Lord Brahma, the creator of the universe, says in Brahma Samhita, Andantarasta Paramanu Chayantarastam, that along with being so great that everything is within him, but he is also so small that he is within the atom. By atom, what he means, what he is specifically saying actually, is when you take matter and you divide it, and then you take that divided piece and you divide it again and again and again and again until you can no longer divide, until it becomes indivisible, then that smallest particle of matter, Lord Brahma says, that Krishna, God, is so small, he is within that, although everything is within him at the same time. Of course, this is a little difficult for our small minds to really grasp very clearly, but in principle, the point is there, because he is unlimited, not only unlimitedly big, but he can be unlimitedly small. And of course, he is unlimitedly beautiful. The absolute truth is the sum total of everything, the sum total of all beauty. When Krishna was present on this planet 5,000 years ago, he was so beautiful sometimes he would walk in the street and people would see him and they would faint, just being overpowered by his beauty. No one fainted when they saw us. Or even Miss World. Or Mr. World. No one fainted. Because, you know, even though some people, of course, they do look relatively very, very nice, but not that nice. What to speak of by the time they're in their 50s or 60s or 70s. It's a downhill road. We can vouch for that. Yes. So, but then, in Bhagavad Gita also, same Bhagavad Gita a little later on, Krishna says, Mrityu Sarvaharas Chaham. I am death. I am all-devouring death, Krishna says. Kalosmi lokakshayakrit. I am time, and I have come to engage everyone. Which is a nice way of saying, I have come to destroy everyone, ultimately. So like this, these are different perspectives on God, different ways of seeing him in different senses. Sometimes, well, you know, we're all sitting here, we're from different backgrounds. Some of us, many of you, of course, from Indian backgrounds. Some of you from African backgrounds. I'm originally from New Zealand, of all places, the All Blacks. But I'm also a South African citizen, so Springboks too. Doesn't matter who wins. It's good either way. Anyway, that's another thing. But, so some of us here brought up as Hindus, some as Christians, some perhaps an African traditional type of religious environment, some maybe Muslims, some maybe just some other idea altogether. But from the perspective of, well, in Krishna consciousness, we regard these different approaches to the subject of God, you could say, as being, at least if they're genuine, of course, if someone just makes up something about God, then that's another thing. But if they're actually bona fide and really valid, then they're simply different perspectives on the same subject. which is God, or the absolute truth. Just different perspectives of the same thing. And from different perspectives, the same thing will inevitably look different. And to the different people who are looking from the different perspectives, then the same thing must look different. Just like we often give the example, simple but very clear example, that someone is a parent, a middle-aged person is a parent. So his children see him in a certain way from their perspective. His wife sees him in a somewhat different way in certain very important respects. She sees him quite differently. Then his parents see him also from a different perspective, again in quite a different way. And then his friends see him in different ways depending on the nature of their friendship with him. His boss sees him in another way. If he has some enemies, they'll see him in another way. Someone loves him, someone is frightened of him, someone hates him. Someone appreciates him, someone thinks he's a bit stupid. But it's one person. One person. And you cannot say that any of those perspectives, you cannot say that just the wife's perspective is correct and the children who see him as some big important person and, you know, like the boss, so to speak, that the way they see him, no, that's wrong. He's not like that. He is the way the wife sees him. No. So it's like this in the Vedic tradition, we understand that Krishna, that God, is such a great person, so unlimitedly great, that if people appreciate him in different ways, it is only to be expected. It's only to be expected. It's not possible that everyone is going to see him in exactly the same way. But where real depth of spirituality comes in, or where greater depth, as greater depth of spirituality comes in, then people are able to deal with and harmonize the different perspectives without becoming sort of, you know, polarized or marginalized or traumatized or something like that, just confused. But actually they're able to harmonize and appreciate the different perspectives and see the harmony which is there in fact. So this is very nice. Anyway, well, just like I mentioned, God is so beautiful, but at the same time in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, I am death, I am time, and I've come to destroy everyone. In other words, very beautiful, very nice, but on the other hand, very horrible. Death is the most horrible thing practically. Nobody wants to die. If someone is confronted with the immediate prospect of death, is very shocking for the great majority of people. Terribly shocking. But the same person is the most beautiful and most wonderful. What is this? So, this term Krishna in the Vedic tradition is taken to be the most comprehensive descriptive term. Comprehensive, in that it includes the different perspectives of the vastness and the smallness, the beauty and the horror and all these things, which are all just, you know, different perspectives on that same one absolute truth who is the cause of all causes. So Krishna, the term Krishna means the all-attractive person. He who has all attractive qualities in full. Beauty, of course, generally people are attracted to beauty. But some people are attracted to horror. Isn't it? You know, I know particularly, in, at least I've heard, particularly in America, there's a cult of horror movies, which are not just like, you know, I don't know what a popular horror movie is these days, but, you know, I mean, they're really bizarre in their ghastliness. Yeah. But some people like them. Some people are just deeply fascinated, deeply attracted by, you know, something which the average person would find just too shocking. So, you know, different horses for different courses, and different people have different tastes. Some appreciate big things. Some appreciate fine, delicate, small things. It's like that. So all attractive, having all attractive qualities in full, this literally includes everything. People are attracted. Yes. So Krishna, this term Krishna is very nice in that way. So here, anyway, that was just sort of like a cultural point even of language. We use this term Krishna because we feel it's very appropriate and very nice and very suitable for addressing the Supreme Absolute Truth. And here Krishna is expressing a very, very broad general principle that everyone should dedicate everything to him. Everything should be done for him, for his pleasure. After all, everything belongs to him, and if we are to utilize everything properly, then everything should be utilized for him. And when everything is utilized properly in the natural way, then naturally everything works very nicely. Naturally there is harmony. If everything is used properly as it's actually intended. So Krishna says, whatever you do, that should be done for his pleasure. Whatever you eat, that food should be offered to him for his pleasure. And then we should take the remnants as his mercy. And whatever we offer, pretty much everyone has the propensity to give something in charity. Under certain circumstances, people will feel inspired to give some donation. And everyone may perform some austerity. But those austerities should be done for his pleasure. Austerity? You may think, what austerity? We don't like austerity. But just consider that everyone, well, not everyone, but so many people are going and working from morning till night. And, you know, at least so many people who have to work hard, they don't like it so much. Is that right? You know, can you imagine? If you really liked it, You know, you thought that actually doing this work is just so fantastic. I'm just so happy doing this work. Then you wouldn't need them to pay you, would you? Because you'd be having just so much fun. You don't need to pay me. I'm just just doing it is enough. But of course, the great majority of people, if they weren't paid, they wouldn't do it. Yeah, so that means it's not really so much fun. And we know very well that many people find it frustrating and often difficult to have to work so hard. It's a sacrifice. You sacrifice your useful time. You could be lying on the beach, surfing, hanging ten, or whatever, you know, whatever your particular thing is, you could be doing. But no, you have to grind it out in the office or shop or factory, being paid, you know, with the boss paying you as little as he can get away with. And you have to do this. So it's an austerity. At least for many people, it's an austerity. But because they have to do it, even though they're not really happy, and sometimes they may be in great anxiety even, but still they do it because they have to. So it's an austerity. So Krishna says that austerity even, everyone has to accept some austerity. But Krishna says, you should do that for me. Everything should be done for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. The basic principle, you know, this may sound a little simplistic, but it illustrates the point and principle. The basic idea is that we are parts and parcels of the complete whole. Just like the finger is, even though it's a unit on its own, but it's part and parcel of, first of all, the hand, and then the complete body. If the finger acts very nicely and serves the interest of the whole body by putting food in the mouth and manipulating things in different ways for the benefit of the complete being, then the finger will be happy. But if the finger or the hand decides, no, I will not serve the whole body, I will separate myself and go away and do my own thing. So if somehow the hand is then cut off, actually separated from the body, and the hand is allowed to try to do its own thing, obviously it will work. And in fact, the hand will be destroyed through becoming independent in that way. You know, there in English we have, you know, if you analyze sort of etymologically or grammatically, in English we have some really extraordinary sayings, like, if you're trying to do something but you need help, there's a saying, right? Can you lend me a hand? So, you know, if you take it on face value, it means you cut off here. Here, take my hand. So, yeah. But the hand, when it's part of the body and functioning for the service of the body, for the interest of the complete being, then the hand is also happy itself. So we are parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord, of the Absolute Truth. We are part of the totality. And if we perform our natural functions in terms of our position within the totality, then we will naturally be happy. Just as the hand is naturally happy when it's nicely engaged in serving the interests of the whole being. This is a very simple point, but the principle is valid. And if we just go off and try and do our own thing independently, then just as the hand becomes finished, if it becomes separated from the body, then if we become separated or try and do our own thing independent of the absolute truth, then we become deteriorated. Our lives become deteriorated. We lose our happiness, and eventually we lose everything. So, of course, in current day society, in this material world, the basic program is, let us do our own thing. In general, this is the idea. We look after number one. Yes. Make sure you're okay. Try and get ahead yourself, even at the expense of others. Yeah, these things are going on. These types of ideas are there, of trying to just further our own interests, independent of others and independent of the whole situation. But this leads to deterioration. And we would say in Krishna consciousness, we would say, this is why life is very difficult. That's why life is very, very difficult in this material world. And if anyone doesn't believe it, just look at a newspaper and you'll see so much difficulty. So much difficulty for so many people. And so many people, in order to try to further their own interests, so many people going off on sort of weird tangents and getting into strange things. You want to hear an interesting little story? I hope this won't embarrass anybody, or too many at least, say. But as I said, I'm originally from New Zealand and I was just there. It was, what, a month ago, visiting my 87-year-old mother. And New Zealand is very different from South Africa. And, well, you know, one difference, anyway, the particular thing which it really struck me at the time, is that in New Zealand, prostitution is legal. They're forming a union, and I'm not joking, and they're called sex workers. It's just a fact. And so what happened? The latest, you know, interesting thing is that there was one doctor. There is one doctor. Actually, he's Canadian, he's not a New Zealander, so maybe the New Zealanders aren't so bad. Anyway, this doctor, he was in some smallish town north of Auckland, in the northern part of New Zealand. And maybe people were not getting sick enough. I guess people were not getting sick enough, so he wasn't getting enough business. You know, doctors generally, they like kind of affluent lifestyles and so on, but he was not making it. So he had, a bit of a brainstorm. You know, he got this bright idea. He decided that his surgery, his shop, where he sees all his patients, that we are not going to use it as a surgery, we will make a brothel. Because it's legal. It's completely legal. You just put a sign out, and it's totally legal. And that was the interesting thing that was happening. The people, of course, you know, little conservative, little country town, they were up in arms about it, but it was legal. And he was putting a sign up advertising and putting advertisements in the newspaper. Anyway, sorry, Hare Krishna. Forgive me for that. But, you know, it just shows the material nature. People try to enjoy independently, but the material nature gets a hold on them. And people go off on all sorts of weird tangents, trying to enjoy in this material world, trying to enjoy independently, trying to find happiness. So Krishna here is giving that basic idea that everything should be dedicated to him. If we dedicate our work to him, we offer our food to him, and if we give whatever we're going to give away, if we give it to him, and any austerities that we perform, we do them for him. If everything is dedicated at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then we become properly situated. And then we become naturally very happy, just like here in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is trying to convince Arjuna, his friend. He's trying to convince him to fight. Arjuna was a warrior. That was his nature physiologically. He was that type of person, a warrior. But this particular situation, he didn't want to fight. So Krishna was trying to convince them that you're a warrior. It's your nature. You have to do it. If you try to not do it, then you'll become bewildered and you'll end up doing it anyway later on because it's your nature. So just do it. But do it as an offering to me. Do it as an offering to me. So, of course, fighting, you know, when we're children, we may be attracted to playing cops and robbers and, you know, mock shooting other people. And we may think it's fun. But when you're out on the battlefield, from what I hear, it's not much fun. And, you know, the majority of the soldiers on the battlefield are, you know, deeply disturbed, actually. Although you get a few sort of Rambo types. Because, you know, it takes all types. So you get a few people who may be attracted to that by nature, but otherwise, it's not easy. So Arjuna didn't want to fight, although it was his nature. Due to circumstances, he didn't want to fight. But Krishna convinced him that you're a warrior by nature, so you should fight. It's just natural for you. But that fighting should be done as a service to me, to God. So Arjuna agreed. He said, okay. And he fought. So Prabhupada, our spiritual master, Prabhupada explains that when Arjuna fought, in Krishna consciousness, in God consciousness, when Arjuna fought, that the experience was not uncomfortable for him. Although it was all hand-to-hand combat, face-to-face, sort of hacking each other to pieces, basically. You know, a very ghastly form of warfare. But because he was doing that in God consciousness as a service to the Lord, then Arjuna felt like he was dancing. It was a very wonderful experience because he was doing that. Of course, he was fighting to defend the people who were being oppressed, extremely severely oppressed. He was fighting not in an aggressive sense of just, you know, like a colonial imperialist, something like that. That he was fighting defensively to protect the innocent. But as he was doing it, he felt like he was dancing. It was blissful. And not just because he was someone who likes killing, but because he was doing it as a service to the Lord. So anyone who dedicates their activities for the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in pure Krishna consciousness, pure God consciousness, then their work done as a service to the Lord, instead of being frustrating and stressing one out and so on, but actually it becomes very blissful. So Arjuna's situation of not wanting to fight and Krishna convincing him to do it as a service to him, to the Lord, that principle can be applied to anyone in any situation who's having to do something they may not always like doing it. But if they do it in the service of the Lord, then they become happy and blissful even. So this we should try and do. And here in our house here, our housewarming, Prema Sindhu Prabhu and Krishna and Rasarati and Priya, they are utilizing the house not just a place to come at night after work and sort of fizzle out in front of television in, but actually as a place for developing, coming together and working together to develop and increase their Krishna consciousness. So this is really the best use of a house. Not just a place to come and hang out and like this, but a place where the family can come together in Krishna consciousness and help each other in Krishna consciousness. And the whole environment in the house becomes surcharged spiritually. And then anyone who walks into it, they can feel that transcendental atmosphere. So this we should try and do. And here, of course, we're talking, as we said, we're talking in terms of principle. Srila Prabhupada made the point that I am not he was dealing generally with Christians when he went to America first, then Canada, then Europe, then Australia, New Zealand, like this. He was dealing 90% or 99% even with people from Christian backgrounds. And Prabhupada he said on many occasions, I'm not trying to stop you being Christians or convert you, in other words, but I'm just trying to help you so you can add something in which will enrich your God consciousness, enrich your spiritual life, and help you to deepen your relationship with God. So this is something that anyone from any background, genuine religious background, can do and benefit. Not that only the Hare Krishnas should serve God. The Muslims, no, they're not allowed to do that because they have to be different. They should just go and blow themselves out or something like that. Only the Hare Krishnas should serve God. Only the Hare Krishnas should chant the names of God. The Christians should do something else. No, it's not like that. It's not like that. But everyone in a particular context should apply these principles, universal principles, and in this way deepen their relationships with God. So let me just read the verse again. Yat karoshi yadashnasi yat johoshi dadasiyat yat tapasyasi kamteya tat kurushva mad arpanam. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, and whatever austerities you perform, do that, O son of Kunti, as an offering to me. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Any comments or questions? Words of wisdom?
Thanks so much.
Oh, yes, sir. Please speak up.
So the climate in South Africa at present is about the local elections and things like that, the political right. aspect. And then we looked at what you were saying in terms of doing every offering for the pleasure of God. Then through what you said put at the end about building yourself up. And I just put it all together. I thought maybe I could present a question about this particular group of people who believe firmly that they are doing this for the glory of God. And when they enact these pastimes, you know, suicide bombings and so on, they say Allahu Akbar and they detonate themselves in the service of God according to their perception, according to their understanding. And at the same time, we also have a philosophical belief that if you take in the name of God at the time of death, there's a possibility of liberation. And so I just wondering, how do we just, you know, like reconcile all these different things?
Okay, well, some thoughts on the subject. Like we said, it has to be bona fide, like the perspective, the understanding, the action has to be valid. It has to actually be God conscious. And what we mean by that is coming in a tradition which is actually coming from God, and coming authentically. You know, there's a saying in Christianity, I mean, it's just an interesting saying, that the road to hell is paved with good intentions. I mean, there are other roads to hell which are paved with bad intentions, but sometimes the road to hell may be paved with good intentions. Meaning people get some bright idea. Oh, let's, you know, do something radical like this for God. You know, you get these, they call them millenarians. And their millenarians means people, well, it's particularly a Christian phenomenon more than anything, that the end is nigh. He is coming, you know, like in 10 minutes or, you know, in a few months or something like that. So let's get ready, and when the time comes, we'll just do ourselves in at the crucial moment, and that'll be great. So you get different types of concocted ideas. I remember back, it was in the later 70s, a group of, you know, ostensibly Christians, at least they definitely thought they were, in Guyana. It was Guyana, South America. This whole community was like 1,000 or whatever, some, you know, substantial number. They all committed suicide. You remember that? Cyanide. Yeah. But they thought, you know, this is just, you know, this is just fantastic. But, you know, I mean, they felt like that. But many others who are also religious would not agree. So the point is that, you know, it's one thing to say that, oh yes, we are now doing this for God, but another thing for it actually to be valid. it's another thing, whether it is truly authentic or not, or whether it's just something, you know, coming out of our foolish brains. Yeah, so you know, in principle, that's the problem, that you get people who concoct. Even they may concoct, they sort of extrapolate. From the beginning point is something valid, but they then go and extrapolate, concoct, speculate off in another direction. Because they're starting from a valid point, some like authentic religious point, which is accepted by so many people, then there's an air of respectability, or it may appear to validate what they're doing, but actually what they're doing may be very invalid and you know, even directly opposed to the very principles which they think they're upholding. So, you know, so it's very crucial then, the authenticity, whether it is real or whether it is just some human imagination. And therefore Prabhupada, when he presented Bhagavad Gita, his translation and commentary, he titled it Bhagavad Gita As It Is, because his point is specifically not to concoct anything. But where he may give some commentary on Krishna's statements, it's simply to clarify, to develop the statement, or clarify the statement, not that he's taking the idea and then giving his own idea on that idea. So this is very important. You know, like, a very interesting example that I've encountered coming from a Christian background. You know, when I was at school, I was at an Anglican school from beginning to end. And, you know, we really got sort of, I wouldn't say indoctrinated, but they taught us a lot every day, you know. Yeah. So there at school we were taught that, I think it's the fifth commandment, if I remember correctly, is thou shalt not kill. Just a few, like 10 years ago. Which, you know, as you get older, 10 years ago becomes just a few years ago. Anyway, just a few years ago, I was in Durban, we were having our Rathiyatra there, and some young, you know, enthusiastic Christians came by. And we were talking about this point. Well, the point was about vegetarianism, actually. And I said, well, look, you know, we all know that commandment says thou shalt not kill. So, you know, that's sort of, there you go. That kind of, in a sense, says it all. But then this young man said, no, it doesn't say that. It doesn't say that. And he opened up his Bible and he showed me, said, look, see, it says, thou shalt not murder. You know, which generally means other human beings, in, you know, in a particularly uncalled for aggressive way, something like that. But, you know, when I was that age, it said, thou shalt not kill. And, you know, we won't go into what it actually says in the Aramaic or whatever language that statement is actually in the original text, but, you know, it's just a very interesting point of principle. So Prabhupada, and in our mind, this point of authenticity and keeping things actually what they are, not just going off with our fertile brains and expanding things, that's a very important point. Okay. Now, you know, it's getting late. I think we'll stop here.